CPR is one of the acronyms that usually needs no explanation, mostly because it's a little tricky to say cardiopulmonary resuscitation. CPR helps people in cardiac distress, and it's a helpful skill to have when someone goes into such distress and there are no medical professionals around. But a recent study shows a gender split. When there's a case of someone needing CPR, it appears more men get it than women. We'll have a chance to get into the specifics of the study and talk about CPR at greater length with Audrey Bleuer, who's the lead author of the study and the assistant director for educational programs at the Center for Resuscitation Science at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Audrey, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Hi, thanks, Jeff Riley.
This sounds like a lot of data. Talk about the collection of it and how the project even got started.
Yeah, so To look at this particular question, we used data from the Resuscitation Outcomes Consortium, which is a national clinical trial registry that was conducted in the U.S. and Canada from 2006 to 2015. And I used data from 2011 to 2015. And some of the data was actually collected in the Seattle King County area and down in San Diego and Portland as well, so on the West Coast.
Is it strictly a West Coast study then, or is it national?
No, it's national. So there was data from those particular areas, Pittsburgh, Texas, and there was data collection that was actually taking place in Canada as well. It's a great consortium, and it has really helped advance a lot of different questions in the resuscitation science field.
So it's all about, when you talk about a resuscitation consortium, so it's studying all sorts of issues around CPR, who gets it, how it's delivered, that sort of stuff?
Correct, and even outcomes, survival outcomes, and differences in terms of pre-hospital care.
All right, so obviously, who gets it will have a difference in the outcome. I mean, how different is the outcome for a person who gets CPR when they need it versus somebody who doesn't and they just wait for the paramedics to arrive?
Yeah, so in terms of this particular question, what we were interested in looking at was gender differences, and what's probably important to note is what we found specifically was that males were more likely than females to receive CPR in the public. And when we looked in the home, there was no difference. And I think it's important to think about the location and where this happens because particularly the question of interest is if somebody collapses from a cardiac arrest, who's responding and who receives this bystander CPR. So our study looked at who received it, and the fact that males were more likely than females in the public may speak to who's responding in the public environment and what potential biases there may be in the public compared to the home environment. So taking this a step further, when this concerns the home, one can imagine that the people that are responding in the home are probably family members or close loved ones of the victim of sudden cardiac arrest. And this may be different in the public environment. We don't know for certain because we don't have, few studies have really looked at characterizing the people that respond to victims of sudden cardiac arrest, but I think it definitely opens up a lot of potential questions and areas for future investigation for people in this field.
So what were the numbers that you found? Let's talk about the public part first, because that was where the disparity showed up. What percentage of men, what percentage of women?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So basically what we found was that in terms of the public, 45% of males received bystander CPR in public compared to 39% of females. So that's just the raw unadjusted data. But that particular, when comparing these two groups, we saw that the difference was statistically significant, so the p-value was less than 0.01. And what this may suggest is that there are differences when it comes to people responding in the public and that perhaps we need to think a little bit more about our messaging around CPR and perhaps think a bit about how we're training people when it comes to CPR and responding in cardiac arrest situations.
So 45% of men, 39% of women. It's not a huge difference. It's 6 percentage points, but you're saying that is statistically significant. And this we're talking about, what, 11,000 different cases you had here?
Yeah, so we actually had 19,000 and some change. So, in terms of that, when we actually pared down and looked at those that occurred in the public and then adjusted for other potential confounding variables, we saw that that association still held when we looked at the arrest events that occurred in the public.
Audrey Bleuer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Master of Public Health and the Assistant Director for Educational Programs at the Center for Resuscitation Science at the University of Pennsylvania. We're talking about the study that she was the lead author of that showed that statistically men get bystander CPR in public places more often than women do. Your thoughts and comments welcome on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Were you able to control for kinds of public environments? And I wonder if there were any that might have showed differences, you know, airports versus movie theaters versus shopping malls, anything like that?
You know, that's a great question. And unfortunately, our data set wasn't that precise. But in terms of future investigation, I think that's a great line of inquiry and something to think about in the future.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, whether you would notice differences. Any other controls for, you know, kinds of neighborhoods or anything like that?
Yeah, so I did control for neighborhood level covariates just in terms of population level, gender, age, race, socioeconomic status in terms of education and income, but we didn't have any specific residential neighborhood type information on the patient level covariates, if
All
that
right.
makes sense.
And it does. So do you have... In addition to the raw data, are there any verbatim comments or further investigations that were possible to find out why there appears to be a disparity between men and women?
Yeah, you know, in terms of next steps when it comes to this line of inquiry, I think that without a doubt, I think that what we need to study a bit more is just who is responding in these cardiac arrest situations. Now, that's not something that we have readily available in this particular data set, but I think it's something that needs to be investigated in the future. And I know there's been a lot of research that has been conducted over the past 20 years in terms of barriers to bystander CPR delivery. So people fear hurting the victim, and there are a lot of, to some extent, what we could characterize as more psychological reasons why people don't act. But I think that a little bit of what we also need to perhaps think about is whether or not there are just population-level demographic disparities in terms of who responds in these cardiac arrest situations. For example, maybe we need to be delving deeper into potential biases that we haven't really thought about, and perhaps we need to think about the way that we're training people in CPR. I think one of the things that we had suggested at one point is that a lot of our CPR training curriculum has stayed the same over the past 10 or 20 years. So maybe there needs to be something that we need to be doing in the training to address some potential biases that we hadn't really thought of before in the past.
Biases about people and their differences or just?
Yeah, perhaps. So for example, and not taking this too far, because this isn't something that's actually explicitly stated or found in our study, but you know, we are taught on male half-torso mannequins. Maybe we need to do a simulation trial looking and seeing whether or not people respond differently based on how the anatomy of the torso is built. So one can imagine creating a randomized control trial using these simulation mannequins and looking at potential differences in CPR quality and willingness to act.
So it's only a guess that the fact that women have breasts and men don't could be a contributing factor to why women don't get CPR. People are reluctant to touch other people in sensitive zones.
Yeah, I think that what this study raises is a lot of questions. And I mean, without a doubt, this is a population epidemiologic level study. But I think that there's potential for delving into this a bit more with simulation studies and probably survey studies asking people about their potential thoughts and biases when it comes to this particular topic.
Now, around and after the time you presented your findings early November, there was so much in the news about people touching women inappropriately. And then, of course, just in relating the news of this study, I noticed the New York Daily News used a rather indelicate term for women's breasts. So I just wonder if there's a concern that between the news about like members of Congress having to leave because they've been touching people inappropriately and your news, if there's a concern, it might actually get to be a greater gender disparity.
You know, that's a great question, and to some extent a bit outside of probably my area of expertise. I think that probably what we can see in terms of what we know in terms of resuscitation and people acting in emergency response type situations, I think that what we can be encouraged from in the data is that actually in a lot of countries, more people have been responding and delivering bystander CPR. And our numbers have been on the uptick as well in the United States. I think we're kind of in the business of trying to just get more people to do bystander CPR and act in cardiac arrest situations. And whatever we can do to improve communication around this particular point, I think we'll just improve our numbers. I can't really speak to any of the outside situations, but I think that we're just really in the business to kind of promote CPR and just communicate that CPR saves lives. So let's get more people pushing hard and fast on the center of the chest.
And that really is it. I mean, it's chest compressions at this point. There's no mouth-to-mouth component anymore with CPR. Is that correct?
Correct. So, and just as of 2017, there was even an updated guidelines recommendation from the American Heart Association that really strongly suggests that if a layperson needs to do cardiac arrest, needs to respond in a cardiac arrest situation, all they need to do is push hard and fast on the center of the chest. So this is termed hands-only CPR or compressions-only CPR. So if there's an adult victim, that's basically all a person needs to do.
Can you injure someone if you do CPR incorrectly, if you get your hands too low, for example, if you're not in the center of the chest?
Yeah, there is definitely the potential for harm, but as one of my colleagues likes to say, you really can't hurt somebody more than dead. So if somebody is dead from a cardiac arrest, you know, pushing hard and fast on the center of their chest can only improve their outcomes. So that's really what we really push and encourage people to do, because we basically want to prolong their opportunity to essentially be resuscitated and save a life.
Audrey Bleuer, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Assistant Director for Educational Programs at the Center for Resuscitation Science at the University of Pennsylvania, and the lead author of that recent study that showed that bystander CPR is given more often to men in public than to women. So let's come to the real center of it all, because if at this point the instructions are press hard and fast in the center of somebody's chest, pretty much anybody could do CPR. But how? Any idea what percentage of the public is trained for CPR?
That's a great question. We recently had a publication on that, and we found that about 18% of the population stated that they were currently trained in CPR, and that number is quite low, as you can imagine. What that kind of speaks to is the need for people to think about either A, going out and getting trained if they've never been trained before in the past, or thinking about getting a refresher. So if somebody hasn't been trained within the past 2 years, we really encourage people to seek out a course. You know, the course materials have changed. The recommendations have changed. CPR has become simpler. All you're doing is pushing hard and fast in the center of the chest. So, we really strongly support the idea of people going out and getting trained or recertified every 2 years.
And do you know if that 18% is pretty much even men and women, Audrey, or does that tend to skew to men as well?
You know, that is a great question. To be quite honest, that's something that we should look at, and I can't really say off the top of my head, because that wasn't our primary outcome of interest in that particular study.
All right, so the fact is that it's not an issue for not wanting people to know CPR at this point. It sounds like it's become even more sort of an inclusive club, and anybody who can do the hard and fast center of chest compressions is welcome to do that. The issue becomes ultimately, again, outcomes, and so you have tracked some gender disparities in care after the initial coronary event, I understand, too.
Yeah, we did track differences in terms of survival in this particular study, and we saw that males had a 23% increased odds of survival compared to females in our data set.
23% more chance of survival in the women, or
increased odds? Yeah.
Increased
so
odds, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, but does this include some procedures that that were done in actual official medical care? I mean, long past the CPR, men getting some procedures that women aren't getting?
Correct. And I think that this is, when I presented this in November, we kind of suggested this was definitely a secondary outcome, an ancillary outcome to the larger primary finding of differences in terms of bystander CPR delivery, because it's exactly how, what you suggested. There are various types of outcomes or links in the chain of survival that go into when somebody has bystander CPR, when they're transported to a hospital, hospital care, and then final outcomes. So this final snapshot is interesting, but it did not necessarily take into account all the different elements between bystander CPR and survival.
You know, one thing I'm just noticing now by looking at the numbers once again is 45% of men received bystander CPR in public. In private, it's 36% of men. So within private homes, there is less CPR being given, probably because people aren't trained as much.
Yeah, I think more generally what this speaks to, and another topic that's very near and dear to my heart is actually targeting family members and friends of high-risk cardiac patients and CPR and training them. And that's an initiative that we've been doing for quite a few years here at Penn. And I think what you're speaking to in the home is, and what we hypothesize, we don't know for certain, is that the people that are responding in the home could be the family members or close loved ones of the victim. And you definitely highlight an important topic that maybe these people that are responding in the home may not be currently trained, may not feel as confident in delivering bystander CPR. But I think that that's something that is definitely needed, you know, an area of further research is needed to kind of look at this and look at who's responding in the home. But
right.
I think that you're definitely touching upon something.
Audrey Bleuer, Center for Resuscitation Science at the University of Pennsylvania, thank you.